Hello and welcome to the Subsurface Talks podcast. My name is DJ, I'm a 3D artist, and I'm running this podcast to talk with my fellow 3D artists from the digital art community. This is the second part of the interview with Mr. Mitch Sinave, 3D artist, visual artist from Antwerp, Belgium. And in this episode, we talk about working for the music industry and the video that Mitch has done for Korn for the song Worst Is On Its Way, as well as other interesting topics. So I hope you'll enjoy the second part. If you haven't listened to the first one, make sure to check the channel page on YouTube or on podcasting platforms. Without further ado, let's jump straight into the episode.
One of the funniest things about that music video is it got put up on YouTube and somebody sent me an email. I'm like, dude, they totally ripped you off. And I was like, go look at the credits. So somebody did somehow recognize my work in it, which to me was mind-blowing because I, you know, it was client work and I generally I'm kind of doing what they ask me to. So it is interesting to see how that all works, that it is recognizable somehow, even though to me it's hard to see that side of things because I never see my work as somebody else's work. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like hearing your own voice. You kind of, you know what it sounds like, but you have no idea what it sounds like to somebody else. And that I have that with my work as well. It's super weird in a sense. It's not a bad thing. It's just that it's hard to see it. You know, I know how it was made. So I think some of it is like, oof, made that one in like an hour, was being super lazy about it and probably got away with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we kind of like circled around it and somehow getting into that Korn mm-hmm. video. Mm-hmm. Like you're talking about freelancing stuff, getting your own gigs, and finally, sure. Like my big question about this was, how do you really, you know, get hired by someone making a video for Korn, right? How does that happen?
I have the worst question ever. They find you on Instagram and they send you a message. It's really that simple. It's not that I don't really advertise or go looking for work quite a lot, and I've been always been super lucky. Stuff comes to me. For them, it was just, yeah, social media. They just stumbled on it. They stumbled on a couple of things they thought looked cool. And that was one of those pitches where they came to me and they're like, we like what you're doing here. Could you do something similar for us? Because the other like big artist that I've worked for is something that I haven't been able to show. It was for Flying Lotus. And I did a part, this is usually with multiple different artists, so I'm not taking credit for the whole thing, but I did a number of videos for them for their world tour that was going to be in 2020. But we all know what happened in 2020. So I made a bunch of concert visuals for a big artist that will never be seen, which is also really interesting. And then with Korn, yeah, they just sort of found me and they're like, you know, we have a small budget, maybe a couple of days work. Could you throw some stuff out there, see what works? And it all kind of worked out in the end. I did most of the CG in there. There's a couple of shots that are CG that somebody else did, mainly due, I think, to time constraints and budget constraints on their end, my end. It was a very quick job. It only took, I don't know, I can't remember how long I worked on it. I think it was 4 or 5 days of work in total for like 2 minutes of CG. So went pretty hard, but it all worked out in the end. The music industry, the budgets aren't as big as you might think, even for bigger artists, mainly because even if they have a big budget, they need a lot of it, a lot of stuff to be shown, because a concert is 1 to 2 hours easily. You know, even if you're mixing stuff at like every 10, 20, 30 seconds, you still need a lot of content. And if they all want it to be unique, then they usually have a bunch of people working on stuff together. But for the music video, yeah, it was cool. It was a very sort of quick and crazy experience. It's always interesting working with American production companies, because if they're happy, they will want you to just keep making stuff for them generally. I've always found that they're like, all right, cool, on to the next thing. And I'm like, well, guys, I had time for this, but I have other projects going on and I don't do a week in advance. You have to book me a little bit more in advance. I need to, you know, this has to do with me not being a great planner. I try to have enough time before a project so I can finish everything that's going on. And yeah, they generally don't respond well to it because they're like, but we need it now. And I'm like, that's great, but I have other things that I'm doing. And I am, throughout the years, I've become more and more selective, up until the point that where I almost thought of just putting on my website at the contact form, just like, all right, this is the price. It takes 2 months for a music video. That's it. And you get what you get. Like, I just want to see if that would work. If people would be like, yeah, okay, let's just throw money at this guy. Let him do whatever he wants. And then we get a music video, you know, after 2 or 3 months. That could be fun. But yeah, I think people have to be crazy to do something like that.
Yeah, you said about this visual style of yours and that it could be recognizable. Maybe for the audience, the video that we are talking about is Korn, I think it's The Worst Is Yet To Come, the title of the song.
So is it The Worst That's On Its Way or The Worst Is Yet To Come even after?
I'm not sure about the title exactly.
Let me look it up real quick. Worst Is On Its Way, that's it. Yeah.
It's like a black and white, almost black and white video. I think it kind of fits into a lot of your art. They made it probably on purpose. Like, there's a little bit of reddish tones at the end, but it's mostly like a black and white video. And it's like a CGI mixed with some footage of the band, which is also like, it has a lot of grain in it. So it kind of like fits with a little bit of digital noise.
My weird black and white CG style. Yeah.
And there's a lot of things going on with abstract forms and body, like faces and parts of the band members just disintegrating weird ways and stuff like that. And I think it's also like something that appears in your
eyes. Yeah, the idea was that the band sort of breaks down and reforms. And I think when I have a lot of like portraits and stuff, I think a lot of the black and white portraiture that kind of drew them to my work. Because it definitely fit their theme. So I was left like trying to figure out how to animate some of that stuff. And it was interesting. Like, it was a fun project. I think it was just one of those projects where everything went really well. It had to be done quick, but everything I sent them, they were super excited about. Generally, it was mostly if they had any sort of points, just like, can we sweep the camera around the other way, or can we have a slightly different direction? Most of the like animation and things for it were, you know, I think first pass, it was all good. And then they were kind of mind blown that I would render it all at 4K, because they're like, oh, we just usually do renders at 2K and then upscale them. I'm like, man, these are very simple scenes. They render super fast. I'll just give them to you in 4K and then you can do whatever you want with them. So that was fun as well. I'm trying to remember the specifics because it's like 2 years ago at this point. It's been a while. And there's a lot in between that project and everything that's going on now. I'm trying to think if there was anything else, but yeah, for that one, I could definitely see why they approached me. It made total sense, right? It does fit it. And it was funny to get that email where, you know, people thought they were ripping me off. I was like, you know, it was fun to be able to point them at the credits. And it's one of those things, to me, I have a sort of a weird stance on it. Like, if my work is good enough to be ripped off, it means I'm doing good, right? That's how I look at it, at least. Obviously, I would prefer it not to be ripped off and prefer to be paid for that job specifically. But at the same time, if people are getting inspiration from it and figure out their own variation on it, I think that's what art is all about. And I think that's really beautiful. So
yeah. So you said that you worked for another big artist, and like I imagine, like, people looking into doing such things as you know, art, like visuals, movies, whatever of that sort, they sometimes imagine, I guess, you know, like having like one big project like that just like opens up all the doors for you or something like that. Like, was it the case, like you mentioned the American companies that they want you constantly, but you're not always ready to
A little bit. I don't know if a big break is a thing. I think nowadays, especially with AI and everything, the artist and the creator itself is becoming less known. Like, I was listening to a very interesting sort of essay on YouTube Shorts and TikTok, for example. Is this like with YouTube, the creators there, they have their own page and all this kind of stuff. But with TikTok, everybody's just scrolling and people barely remember who posted something. They'll remember the video, but not necessarily who made it or something like that. And I think we're definitely barreling into an age where like the individual person creating something might be a bit more on the background. And one of the things that has always caused me not to post a lot of my professional work, especially when I was doing stuff for brands back in the day, is I don't really care about having a brand on my portfolio. I see a lot of people do that are in the advertising space, and I would understand why, because obviously if you work for a big brand, it's a good look if you're in advertising. But I generally want my work to stand on itself, and a lot of the work that I actually post, it's almost all personal work. The music video is an obvious exception because it was just, the work was good. It was in line with the stuff that I do, and I was quite proud of it, and it was fun to work for them as well. I didn't get to talk to the band. It was just the production company in between, just in case somebody's wondering. Generally, in my experience, you rarely get to talk to the band, but that's fine.
Like, sometimes you get to do that if you're a podcaster. Sure. Like, I've found a guy, like, it's a 12-year-old boy from Ireland. He started a podcast, and he interviewed like two of his like hero, okay, like more of them, but two names that which are instantly recognized. Like he interviewed Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age, and Ian McKay from Minor Threat, Fugazi. So like two kind of like legendary musicians, and like a 12-year-old boy.
Damn! How to kickstart your podcast?
Mind blown.
Well, and that's cool, right? People are a lot more reachable now. I think that's really cool too. My philosophy on art and stuff has always been, I'd rather be found than pushed. That's it. I'd rather somebody find me on social media and be like, holy shit, who is this guy? This looks really cool. Than that I'm like actively pushing it all out there and trying to be in everybody's face about how cool I am. I've never really liked that aspect of it. Would I have been more successful or maybe financially a bit higher up the ladder if I had? Maybe, but I'd rather be the guy behind the screen that's respected than the guy out front that everybody hates. You know what I mean? And that's not necessarily always the relationship, but it's, yeah, I don't know. I'm happy where I am, I guess. I think it's interesting that there's quite a lot of people working in any industry that are insanely cool people that nobody knows about, that have single-handedly brought about huge changes or styles or other things that, you know, we all end up copying in the end. I'm not saying I'm one of those people, obviously, but I prefer to be on that end of the spectrum than the people that incessantly need to tell everybody about their art all the time. That's not saying I won't show you a bunch of stuff if you come to my house because I'm excited about it, but I'll never try to be out on the street telling everybody how great I am. I guess it's a weird way of putting it, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, but some time ago, like, you had your first official exhibition, right? In a gallery, art gallery.
True, but I set that up myself.
Can you tell a bit about this experience? Like, how was it for you?
I'd wanted to do it for a while because it just seemed interesting to even just to have my work on paper, to see how it works. Does it work in a space? Generally, with everything being digital, you know, it's all on social media, and social media platforms are probably one of the worst ways of showing your work because it all gets compressed to bits and they're tiny JPEGs and video compression and all that kind of stuff. So it was nice to be able to make a bunch of really high quality prints and see them for real. I definitely want to do it again. I learned a lot. I'd learned a lot what not to do as well, mainly because I don't have a traditional art background. I've always studied technical stuff, so I never really learned how to curate something and you know, that kind of thing. And again, if you don't think very conceptually, you have a lot of images that are just on their own. So definitely, if I ever do it again, I want to think a little bit more about a concept, even though I was pretty happy with it overall. I think one of the things that was the most fun out of all of it is I'd sat down with a printer that I'd used the last few years, printing some works here and there, and the prints kept coming out wrong. They were too dark. There were like gamma shift issues, color profiles on print. If you think color management and CG is bad, try going from CG to print. And I was just not happy with it. And I was like, And then I asked for a quote as well. It's like, okay, I want to print maybe 40 pieces of art, you know, something like that. So I could still decide a little bit on the day itself what to hang. And they came back with a quote that was like $5,000 or $6,000. And I was like, okay, that's a lot of money to invest. Let's see, you know, my work doesn't have to be 3 meters by 3 meters. Let's see. And then eventually I stumbled upon the fact that you could buy a printer that prints A2 fine art prints for about €1,000. And refilling that thing is like €800 worth of ink. So for about $2,000, and, you know, paper really doesn't cost that much if you're already in that kind of number. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to order a printer and do it myself. And again, this is one of those things, like, you just do it yourself. Most people would be like, what are you, crazy? Don't do it. You know, and this was like, I want to say 2 weeks before the event, not long, maybe even a week before. So I get the printer. I think I had about a week to print everything I wanted to print. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to grab one of my images. I'm just going to throw it through the printer, see how it comes out, and calibrate from there before I start going into this color management hell. It came out near perfect. Like, I was just absolutely blown away. I was like, okay, this is where we start. This is amazing. And then I learned a lot about paper. Turns out I'm a massive paper nerd. So many different kinds of paper, so many beautiful, absolutely amazing. And ended up printing, I don't know, over 100 images, maybe even more. I didn't necessarily hang them all up, but just by doing that process myself, it gave me other ideas printing on different kinds of paper. And I think all in all, at the end of it, I ended up selling, I think, 7 works, which was absolutely mind-blowing to me. Most of the people that came by were people I knew. But there were some surprises as well, and people bought a piece of art that was really cool to see that there was some interest. Now, the other thing that I learned is Antwerp is still very much a traditional art city. Obviously here in Belgium, Flanders, you know, Flemish masters, all that kind of stuff. It's still very ingrained here, and digital art doesn't live as much in Antwerp as it does in some other cities. I think there's room for it, but not as center stage yet. I'm still growing, and people think my work is really dark, which I don't think my work is that dark. I know it has, you know, some elements of the darker themes, but I didn't really think it was that dark. But definitely a lot of people that I knew were like, dude, are you okay? I'm like, sometimes yes, sometimes no. I mean, like anybody else, I guess. So I was actually quite surprised by how weirded out people were. That was kind of an interesting side effect, because I think we all live and breathe digital art, right? When we're doing it, so we see art from all over the place, like from concept art to super, you know, high sci-fi and fantasy 3D art to more abstract stuff to programming art to, you know, it goes all over the place, and it sort of all goes its own way, and then it tends to come back together and split up again. And everybody's done everything in every medium at this point, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it was interesting to see how, I guess, quote unquote, normal people reacted to my work, other than the people that are into it, which are the ones that follow you. So
the funny thing is, like, for example, people that doing a video for Korn, which also kind of have like dark themes mm-hmm. in their music, and, you know, it's all about, you know, about having tough times with your psyche mm-hmm. or whatever. So they kind of like mashed the two together as well. I mm-hmm. guess this is also due to people perceiving like machinery. Like there's the fear of the AI that's currently mm-hmm. like people freaking out about this, like machines going to take over and kill all of us or stuff like that. And if you combine the human body shapes and just like disintegrate with some kind of a digital pattern, I think this seems dark to people, like, in general, this kind of theme.
Yeah. For the longest time, when people ask me why I did a lot of those portraits, is I've always been kind of interested in the digital representation of the human form. Like, there's a DeviantArt page out there that's at this point, I know, 25 years old, where you can see stuff that I made when I was 16. And it was people that was making Imposer and then rendering out wireframes and then doing stuff to them in Photoshop. So even when I go back, it's like I can't escape myself. I've been doing it all this time, and I keep coming back to it because something about it fascinates me. You know, I grew up sort of end of the 90s, early 2000s. Got lucky that my dad was into you know, Hollywood movies. So learned a little bit about VFX, was always sort of interested in that kind of thing, and kind of brought me along to where I was now. And when I look back at like influences and stuff, I think some of the things that are very easily creditable is the iTunes visualizer. I stared at that thing for God knows how long when I was younger, listening to music. And then there was like a couple buttons you can control it, and you could kind of VJ with it, and it was fun. And I remember that pretty fondly. Most kids are like doing sports or doing cool stuff outside. I'm staring at an iTunes visualizer. And another one is a thing called, I believe it's Beyond the Mind's Eye, something like that. It was like a 45-minute music video, basically, but with all like early 90s CG. It's absolutely bonkers. You can find it on YouTube. The composer, Jan Hammer, he's a fairly known composer. He did like, I think one of the main things he's known for was the intro to Miami Vice back in the day. But he did a lot of work for the film industry, a lot of synth work, that kind of thing. And basically, yeah, he did like a 45-minute album, EP, whatever you want to call it, but audiovisual. And somehow, yeah, because my dad was a big movie buff and he used to sell movies at some point as well, that sort of passed me by and I looked at it. And I think some of that stuff's just sort of stuck with me. It's hard to tell where it all comes from, but yeah, something I realized a few years ago when I was putting together a talk, it was like I stumbled upon it somehow. I can't even remember. I was like, I looked at it again and it was just like, yeah, I remember all this. This is wild, you know.
I guess it's like it's not a very unusual thing for a 3D artist to do, you know, to try to scan body or like replicate. Mm-hmm. Like I've looked a little bit to the history of 3D, and when they were doing the experiments in the 70s or 60s in the United States, and they
at Catmull and all those guys,
like one of the first things they made was this scanned hand.
Was the hand, right?
Yeah.
And did you see the machine that they used to scan it?
Yeah, that's crazy.
With the big like 3D plotter, and then they put the point and then they register the point. Must have been absolutely wild.
So
and if you look at it now, like if we want to scan something, we just pull out our phone, walk around it, we've got it. It's insane how far we've come.
They were kind of like doing the computers with sticks and stones. We talked a little bit about Korn and some other musicians. Like, let's dig into that sort of music. Is there any kind of like a musical dream that you'd like to work for some kind of an artist?
Ooh.
Dead or alive, I don't know. Just like let's go wild with dreams.
It's a tough one. I don't know. Yes and no, I guess. I was a really big Linkin Park fan growing up. And a big part of that is because Joe Hahn, one of their members, takes care of a lot of the visual aspect of their stuff. And their music videos were always very, very full of CG and new technology, and like they really pushed the envelope of what music videos could do. So if they would ever approach me to do something, I'm super down. That would be amazing. But I don't know if I could necessarily top any of the amazing stuff that they've done over the years with the people that they've worked with. I don't know. There's a lot of interesting people. I guess a lot of electronic music productions. It's hard to say somebody off the top of my head, honestly. I think Chiasmos might be interesting. They're a sort of techno. Is it techno? I'm not great with styles, which is very funny for somebody that works in the music industry. It's like, don't ask me too much about music. I know what I like, but yeah. They're pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I love working with my brother. He's a musician, and we'll have some music videos coming out in a couple of next few weeks as well, which is fun. But to pick one or two people, I don't know, honestly. I'm grateful for everybody I get to work with. Because I say Linkin Park because I grew up with them, but I don't necessarily know if what they're doing now would suit me. You know, I'm in a different place in my life as well. I used to listen to them for a very long time, and only the last couple of years I kind of dropped off a little bit. So it's hard to say, honestly. There's not really one person that I would say yes or no to. So
I guess that's this thing that you're talking about, music and styles. I think a lot of musicians would kind of dig that, in terms of like not trying to, you know, fit themselves too much. Like, it's maybe marketing wise, it's not a best thing to be like super creative and open to anything. But a lot of musicians like don't like to label themselves like in a specific style. It's a retroactive thing that once you do your style, you know, you create your music and then it's probably like labeled upon the music that you're doing.
I actually personally have a hard time with that in the sense that I think most people know me for my CG work, but I also film stuff. I also do photography. I've worked a lot with AI in the last year or two, but I don't really know where to put it. Do I just dump it all on the main Instagram? And then like, I'm terrified of putting any of my AI work on it because people are very anti-AI at the moment. But I'm, you know, so I've made like a separate Instagram for that and I haven't really announced it anywhere. It's mostly like horror, super, super gross, nasty horror stuff. I think, did I show you any of it at the Blender conference?
Yeah.
You did.
So, some of the stickers and stuff.
So you kind of know what it's about. So it's like, and that doesn't necessarily fit what I'm doing on Instagram, like on social media. So it's like, what do I do with it? Because I do find it interesting. And like, we can go on a little bit of an AI side tangent if you want, but for me, it's like you said, I don't necessarily want to be contained. I don't want to be the black and white Blender portrait guy because there's so much more to the stuff that I do. I don't always show everything. Like the last few music videos that I showed, it's all like macro videography. So it's something completely different, but in a sense, it's similar. It's abstract. It's kind of out there. I really enjoy doing that stuff as well.
I remember when one time you kind of asked on the social media whether you should post the stuff on the same page as your 3D abstract work. And I think like it fit perfectly and people really were interested in that. And yeah, I also enjoyed like looking at this photography experiments. And I wanted actually to ask about this, like how close do you think these two worlds live for you? Like do they kind of like intersect or are they totally separate areas of your...
I think, no, they definitely intersect. I don't think right now I'm not really combining them necessarily, but one of the things that I do like about it is like, because the macro filming is still quite new to me, I've only been doing it for the last year or two or so, maybe something like that. It sort of feels like back when I started doing music or CG at first, where it's like you don't know anything, so you might be breaking a bunch of rules, but you just don't know. You're just being creative and kind of dealing with what you get from that process and then putting it into something that is somewhat cohesive. And I like that about it. That's why I never went to do music professionally. It's something I thought about when I was younger. But I felt like whenever I was in a band and we would try to take it seriously and start recording stuff or whatever, it all inevitably became like a job. And I didn't like that, you know, especially music for me was just a way to unwind for the most part. And that's the thing I have with the macro music videos. It's like there's no rules. I haven't really figured anything out yet. I'm still experimenting a lot. Whereas with CG, I tend to fall back on some of the stuff that I've built up throughout the years, like the knowledge that I've built up throughout the years. So you end up repeating yourself a lot. And like there was a while where I could post a few years ago, there was a while where I could post pretty much everything I was making because I would go into it, make something start to finish and done. And I think at this point, I only post, I would say 40%, roughly about a third of what I make only finds its way on the internet. And there's even finished projects and everything in there, which I just don't want to show to people because I'm not 100% proud of them. And that happens a lot with the CG part of things because you've like built up a standard for yourself throughout the years and you're like, I want it to be at least this good. And it's not really a set parameter, but you just see it. Is it like, is this good enough or not? And does it make the cutoff? And I don't have that feeling yet with the other stuff. So it's really nice to get away from the more serious CG work where you inevitably take it somewhat more serious because, you know, you've been doing it for so long, there's not much you can do about that. So the other stuff is a lot of fun because I just don't care. You know, it's just like, all right, cameras are on, they're rolling. I'm just going to mess around to see what happens. And honestly, compared to CG, any other process is so fast. because it's like I film everything. I've got 2 hours of footage, and I can edit a music video out of that in like 2 days. It is just insane. Whereas with 3D, even the fastest ones I've done in 3D are like three weeks of work, like proper work, which may not seem like a lot to most people doing CG for like a 5 minute music video, but it's intense. You know, it's like trying to keep track of all the shots and doing everything. And whenever you need to add a shot, you're like, oh God, I have to redo this whole scene. And like, it can be a total nightmare. And with the video stuff, it's like, all you need is storage, because you just leave the camera rolling. You futz around with it, you know, add a little bit more oil, add a little bit more paint. All right, try something else. And I just have all my oils and paints and everything on hand, and I'm just messing around. And that feels way less like work now again. So it's I'm always trying to get away from it to feel like a job, which is probably the worst advice I can give anybody trying to get into like the CG industry. But it's, yeah, if I'm not having fun, I don't really see the point. Then I might as well just get a real job, is sort of what I always tell people. But there is truth to that. You know, sometimes you just have to do the work, obviously. But there is a lot of truth to just make sure that I'm having fun. And yeah, if that means I don't live in a big fancy house or whatever, I mean, I'm happy just to get by making art. You know what I mean? It's an extremely privileged position in my mind. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But I guess, you know, art is a lot of about curiosity, and you know, mm-hmm. is this part of you know, doing the job seriously, it's a little bit of a trap in the art world. Like, people do expect mm-hmm. you know, a repeated, you know, level of consistent, you know, craftsmanship and stuff like that in music as well as in visual arts, but they also are, they expect at least a little bit of this level of unexpected, you know, happy accidents, you know, experimentation, mm-hmm. creativity, things that make you, you know, experience something unexpected, right?
But you can't force that.
Yeah, exactly. You just...
Yeah. You need the time and space for that to happen. You can't really force that. And that's something that, yeah, I get a lot of emails from people like, all right, we need this in like 3 days. I'm like, sorry, that's just not going to happen. I don't, you know, when I was younger, I used to do it because I needed the money, obviously. But the older I get, the more selective I am. And I'm like, I'm sorry, it's just, I'm going to be all stressed out. The work isn't going to be very good. For the Korn video, everything clicked. It's one of those where I didn't have a lot of time, but I got it. And they saw I got it. And, you know, they sent me my work, which means they're just like, just do your thing. Whatever you do, we're pretty sure we'll be happy. That's almost what that's pretty much literally what they said. And that was also the case. So when it's like that, it feels good, but it's always tough to figure out, you know, is this going to be a good job? Is it going to end up being truly horrific? You know, somebody, a podcast that I used to listen to back in the day, the Collective Podcast by Ash Thorpe. He's a very well respected designer and artist. He always used to say, it's like being hired for your skills is like being an art prostitute. It's like, you're just kind of going through the motions, but you have very little creativity and very little input in it. And it can feel very demeaning, and it can just feel very empty, which is the opposite of what you're trying to do when you're trying to make art. And for me also, on the other end of the spectrum, is not everything has to be the biggest, most insane piece of art ever. You know, a doodle can be just as constructive as something that you've been working on for 3 months. And I'll finish that out actually with a favorite thing. When I was studying photography long, long ago, one of my teachers or my professors once said to me, it's not because you take a picture of a piece of art that your picture becomes a piece of art. And I thought that was very indicative of learning from others rather than copying. I always thought that was a very interesting way of looking at it. It's like, okay, yeah, it's true. It's not because there's something beautiful in front of me and I recreate it, or I take a picture of it, or I film it, or whatever, that whatever I've made is instantly beautiful. It's like, no, it's how you present it and how you interpret it and what you do with it that makes it interesting and different, and to some, subjectively, hopefully beautiful. And that is, you know, it's very layered, but I think it does gel well with that idea of leaving space for creativity and interpretation, if that makes sense. I guess, I don't know.
I hope it makes sense. For
we're like an hour in, so my brain's starting to get a little
yeah,
hot.
And then an hour is kind of like a sign for us to kind of try to you know, search for the landing spot.
Start wrapping up. Okay, no worries.
But I thought about some things that you said about, you know, the experience with the exhibition and the printer that sure. really kind of like gave you a different perspective, and like the color management stuff that you mentioned. It's like mm-hmm. obvious when you think about it, really, because you're transferring a totally different way of color to another way.
Analog to digital.
The digital color is really yeah. is really about light, adding, you know, sources of light, red, green, blue, like stuff of that sort. And the printer is it's like you're subtracting light. So it's a different money
totally
system.
Weird. And it's like, and think of anything that converts analog to digital, right? They all suck. Like trying to upscale an analog TV signal to HDMI sucks. Trying to print something sucks. 3D printers, pain in the butt. Like anytime you have to go from digital to analog, it's really, really tough. I think the only things that might be somewhat, and I'm sure there's challenges with it as well, are things like CNC routers or laser cutters. I think it's a little less annoying, but I think it's probably still there because you're still trying to draw out like all your CAD stuff and then bring it over to the real world. And it's an interesting sort of conundrum. Like we all use computers every day, but connecting them to something real in the real world still is still always like a struggle or a challenge. Or I find that super fascinating for something that's so ingrained in our life to this day. It's still like a pain in the ass. mm-hmm. So
yeah, I was thinking about whether you're also thinking of experimenting. Like you said, it got you into, you know, freaking out about the paper stuff mm-hmm. and, you know, the real physical object. Like a lot of people get excited about 3D printing. Mm-hmm. But I thought that your art is kind of like, there's a lot of 3D stuff and abstract forms that are 3D, but then you just like take a snapshot of them and like really 2D them out. Kind of. And I'm thinking about putting this in the 3D space as mm-hmm. as real as it is, maybe VR is a space that might be might allow experiencing this kind of art in a different medium, so to say.
I definitely messed around with VR in the past when it was first sort of becoming a bit more, I guess, mainstream, and like the first second gen headsets, that kind of stuff. And I had a first generation Quest for a little while as well. And the thing about I remember the first time I made something and then walked around it in VR, my mind was absolutely blown. I was like, holy crap, this is possible. This is cool. I made this and I'm like standing in it. That's really impressive. The only reason I'm not that into it is I think like a lot of people, I just got sick of wearing the headset. Like that's, to me, it's still the main hurdle. And like, I love stereoscopic movies. That's all disappeared because, you know, stereo TVs are harder to come by. And I think a lot of it is people don't want to put those stupid glasses on their face. So to me, AR and VR is like, once we've solved that glasses problem, I think it's going to be absolutely huge and it's going to be part of everything. The downside of it, I think, is do I really want advertisements in my visual field? Because we all know it's going to happen.
Trying hard to make the Matrix happen, but do we really want to live in the Matrix?
Yeah, we're a little too hard to make some of the wrong parts of it happen, yeah. But at the same time, I think, you know, even with AI and all this stuff, like it's interesting to see. I feel like we've been through a couple of scares now, right? AI is the latest one where it's like, it's going to destroy everything. And it's like, well, you know, I've used AI quite extensively and it can do cool stuff, but it's also still not very smart. Like there's still a lot of way to go and we'll see where it all ends up. And I say AI because technically it's all machine learning. Obviously it's one of those blanket terms that, you know, got used incorrectly. But I feel like, you know, when photography came around in history, people were like, oh, this is going to kill painting. It didn't. It was just yet another form of art. And I really hope that all the AI and machine learning stuff ends up doing that rather than taking over. Because I think there is validity to it. There's a lot of interesting things to explore with it. I mean, just like because I've been getting into game design, as I said, like now you've got generators where you can just generate 3D models, simple 3D models, assets. And it's like, all right, cool. Let's just generate a bunch of stuff, throw it in a game and let's see where we go. And for prototyping things, it's really amazing. So I think it's obviously it's just another tool. There's a lot of hype surrounding it. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I got sucked into it a little bit as well at the start, and had to take a bit of a step back to kind of go, so what is the benefit of it all? But again, we'll see. Like, for me, one of the things that did kind of shed light on things was the whole NFT craze. And I was part of it pretty early, I think 2019, something like that. I got into it. And unfortunately, with everything that panned out, it's like, you know, if people want to hold it against me, that's fine. I completely understand why it felt the way it does now. But it's like, at the very start, what I liked about it is that it's still the only place where you can see my art full size. Like, a lot of the renders I do are like 6K, 8K, sometimes even bigger. And all of the NFTs that I posted are full resolution or near full resolution, depending on the upload limit back then, of the work. So it's like the only place where you could see it in its proper full quality. And I like that idea of, if somebody in a country that is, you know, financially on the other end of the scale of where I live, and, you know, they can't pay for, let's say, $50 for me to print a poster and ship it to them, but they can pluck my image from the internet and get one for a dollar in their local copy store and be super happy with it because they got a high res original on the internet. That the idea of that, which was like the original sort of ideology of NFTs, was like, the art's for everybody and the owning is for the people that are able to. And it's more of like a supporting patron, I guess. I really like that. Obviously, it didn't turn out that way. It, you know, a bunch of people got in with the monkeys and it just kind of ruined everything from there. And it's fine. It's an interesting point. But it, like, for the briefest moment in time, it felt like digital art had its own space. And I still think we're definitely searching for that still, because yeah, we've all learned now that all the social media platforms have just taken all our art and used it to train all their AI models, right? And I think it's interesting that people are trying to fight against it, but my personal opinion has always been, once you put it on the internet, it's for everybody. Like, obviously, if you want to use my work, it is copyrighted, and I would prefer that you try and, you know, secure a license deal with me. But at the end of the day, I think that comes back down to the thing that I said earlier. It's like, if it's good, it's cool enough to steal, I'm on the right track. I should keep doing what I'm doing. So that was a long tangent.
Yeah, I guess it's we're kind of getting to the place where we can sort of land. It wraps up the whole year that we've been experiencing. So. And I really like this thing about the monkeys that you said, and instantly I remembered the movie The 12 Monkeys. Like, at least
it's been a while since I've seen
there that. Were much more monkeys in this than 12.
Yeah, but
I guess, you know, I guess we'll see about the next year that's approaching right now. We're just like, the episode will be released in the new year, but we're recording just before the New Year's Eve, and I just wanted to ask you whether you have some kind of like plans or dreams for the next year for your personal projects, or
I don't know. So I'm working on a game thing. It's a whole project. This isn't really the place. I'm not going to talk about it here too much. One of the things I'm looking forward to is I'm in a band. I'm like the visual part of a band currently, and we're going to have our EP coming out in April, and we'll have two music videos that I've made, CG music videos, so proper 3D, none of that filming stuff, coming out in February and March. And yeah, I've been sitting on those for quite some time, so I'm going to be very happy to release those. And then I guess my brother's stuff in the coming weeks as well. They're all filmed, but we had some fun out in the woods and had some fun with oil and paint again. So yeah, mostly that. There's not really anything big I've got planned. I've got a few big projects that I'll be wrapping up next year. And then after that, I think 2025, we'll see what happens. I'm a bit more of a free agent again. But yeah, there's some stuff that I want to try, some bigger stuff that I want to see if I can actually, yeah, maybe pitch something somewhere and get a bigger budget to try something. But we'll see. Unless that happens, yeah, I don't want to talk too much about it because it's not even in a stage where I can really talk about anything. But I definitely want to try and pull something a little bit bigger together at one point, see what happens. So if time allows it. So.
Yeah, exactly. So with the band and the videos that are coming up, I guess one thing that we'll need for the audience to where they can find it, like just following your social media or your webpage.
Yeah, it'll be on the social medias. I'll post a lot of it there on my stuff, and then I'll be able to redirect people to the band's stuff. I don't know if it's up yet. They're preparing everything. I've made the music video, so my work is done, I guess. But no, we'll be doing a big visual show as well. We're looking into trying to do a show in a cinema. So rather than doing it at a concert venue, we want to do it in a cinema so you get proper big projection, so everything can be shown, and I might do some VJing here and there as well, which would be cool. But yeah, other than that, nothing major. Just stuff that I've been sitting on for too long that is finally going to see the light of day. So
yeah, sounds great and exciting. Like as you mentioned, like you're kind of judging your creativity and productivity very hard. It's like it sounds like a lot of stuff, you know, going into the new year, and already like a lot of exciting stuff for people that follow your art. So I'm very happy that.
Let's hope everybody likes it. Yeah,
and I'm very grateful for having you on the show and this almost hour and a half of great conversation.
Dude, anytime. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks again, and I wish you all the best in this coming year. Let's hope for the best.
Yeah, same to you.
In the AI world and in the music.
Keep in touch, and or wherever things take me, right? That's it. It's like I'm never really fixed to one thing. I'm happy to try other stuff as well, so we'll see where it goes. I really like game design, so I don't even know where it's going to go from there. I'm starting to slowly make my first couple of games to understand how it all works, and that's also really interesting. So on top of everything else, I'm going to try and learn to make games, which probably isn't the best idea, but hey, there you go.
Yeah, if it's creative, if it's interesting, I guess it's definitely a good idea. So.
Mm-hmm. It's interactive. It's adding a whole new layer to creating art, right? Suddenly there's interactivity. That's completely wild. But anyway, I won't go on about that because then we're going to be here for another half an hour.
All right. So let's get on with the 2024 and let's play this game.
Have a great year, everybody.
That's the end of the second part of the interview with Mitch Sinave. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends. It really helps me keep running this podcast. Feel free to leave any comments under the episodes. Stay tuned for the next episode and stay creative.